So today, in the first month of the new year, I thought it would be a good time. This is the beginning of the year, just gives us all that inspiration for new beginnings. So I thought it would be a good time to start a series on prosperity. So that's what we're going to do. And we're going to base our series primarily on the work of Catherine Ponder. Now, that's a picture on the screen of Catherine Ponder's books. She absolutely is known as one of the renowned, well-known leader of prosperity, really in the world, not just in the United States. As you can see by the screen, she's a prolific author. She's written more than 18 books on prosperity and prayer, and we are going to focus our series primarily on the book Open Your Mind to Prosperity. Now, Catherine's prosperity work began, and this is how she starts her book, this book. It began actually when she was still in first grade. Can you imagine that? And she shares in the book that she lived in a very poverty-stricken area in the South, and most of her classmates didn't even have lunch money or really proper clothes to wear to school. And so she got in the habit of taking her lunch money and giving it to all of her friends who didn't have any lunch. Well, her mother finally heard about this and decided she would put a stop to it. So she said, "Catherine, from now on, you're going to take your lunch. I'm just going to pack your lunch. There's not going to be any money to pass around." And I wrote down the quote because I wanted to get it exactly right. Catherine said, "This made me feel really happy. It meant I could step up my war on poverty by breaking my sandwiches into little pieces and handing them out to my classmates. Mother was never able to stop my giving away my lunches." But one day, Mom said to Catherine, "Catherine, now you're giving away your clothes. I absolutely cannot afford to clothe the entire neighborhood. I'm getting you one more winter coat, and you better not give it away." So one day on a bitter cold, I guess as cold as it gets in the South, a bitter cold morning afternoon, Catherine came home from school obediently with her coat on, and her mom was very thrilled. She was excited. She goes, "Catherine, I'm so proud of you," until Mom looked down and realized Catherine had no shoes on her feet. She had given away her shoes and socks. And Catherine Ponder says about this incident, she said, it was not until years later that I learned how to wage a war on poverty without giving away my lunches, shoes, and socks. And at that point in her book, she quotes a Wall Street economist's formula for a cure for poverty. And here's where, whoops, there it is. "What is needed is not so much a war on poverty as an understanding of the forces that generate prosperity." Catherine Ponder emphasizes throughout her many books that these forces that generate prosperity are actually mental and spiritual. In order to really achieve an end to poverty, she says we must open our minds to prosperity. And we begin this process by clearing out old erroneous ideas about being prosperous. Reverend Ponder writes that in teaching thousands of lessons and workshops all over the world, she discovered that many people have what she calls a psychological block about poverty, about prosperity, and also about poverty, I guess. But for centuries, when we think about it, for centuries, people were taught that being prosperous is sinful. And if you go back to the Middle Ages, a corrupt clergy, along with a very greedy government, actually taught the masses that the only way to salvation was through poverty and penance, that being poor and in servitude would lay up treasures for them in heaven. Now, wasn't that a convenient theology for the ruling class, right? It was. Other error thoughts that we might have in our heads might be that there's not enough to go around. Or one of the worst thoughts of all we could have is that we are not worthy. Ponder writes, "If we think of prosperity as something separate from our spiritual lives, we need to realize that prosperity is part of the divine plan." She writes, "The shocking truth about prosperity is that it is shockingly right instead of shockingly wrong for you to be prosperous. Once people open their minds to this truth, she says, it is as though the windows of heaven will open for them. As Charles Fillmore, Unity's co-founder, wrote in his book Prosperity, the Father's desire for us is unlimited good, not merely the means of a meager existence. Now, years ago, our licensed Unity teacher, Joe Warren, used to tell this story a lot. And the story goes that there was a time at Unity Farm years ago that finances were a little tight, and evidently the Fillmores had failed to make a couple of their property payments. So the banker came to visit, and Charles took him all around the grounds, pointing out the apple orchards and the crops and all the beauty of the farm. And the banker finally said to him, "Well, that's all well and good, but how do you intend to make your next payment?" And Charles just looked him right in the eye and said, "Oh, don't worry about that. I am the son of a very rich father." And the banker went away, and the rest is history, okay? So I honestly don't know if that story's true or not, but I think there's great truth in it, so we'll go with it. And Catherine Ponder teaches the importance of realizing that as we apply these mental and spiritual laws of prosperity, we are not trying to convince God to give us anything. The truth is, the divine promise is, all things are already ours. We have only to open our minds to receive that divine inheritance of abundance, bequeathed to us from the very beginning, and we can begin by affirming, "I am the rich child of a loving father, so I dare to prosper." Did you find a little inset of affirmations on your bulletin today? You should have. This is the third one, and it's. I'd like us to do it together. Did everybody find it? While people are looking for that, it's gold. Take that home and really pray and meditate and practice the meditations during the week. Let's all do that and come back next week and we'll talk a little bit about them. So is everybody ready? "I am the rich child of a loving father, so I dare to prosper." And Reverend Ponder reminds us that the first chapter of Genesis describes this rich universe created for humankind. And we did a series not too long ago about the first 7 days of creation. And when God was finished, according to the story with it all, he called it bad. Not bad, not mediocre, but good, very good. In fact, God created the universe and called it good, and the universe, that goodness of the universe, is our divine inheritance. Now, Catherine Ponder calls the Bible our prosperity textbook. She's actually written an entire series on millionaires of the Bible. I don't know if anybody noticed it on the screen a few minutes ago. In this series, she highlights some of the biblical characters who were either born prosperous, became prosperous, or had access to funds or whatever they needed just at the moment the need arose. And among those greats that she covers are Abraham, Jacob, Joseph, Joshua, Moses, David, and yes, Jesus. Catherine Ponder writes that the prevailing idea about Jesus is that he was poor, but in reality, his life and teachings bear clear evidence of his understanding of the laws of prosperity. He was supported and welcomed into homes all over Palestine, into the homes of the rich men and women. Remember Martha and Mary? They were wealthy sisters, and they often hosted he and the disciples in their home. And also, he was welcome in the homes of the poor on the hills of Galilee. And at the very end of his life, he wore a seamless garment, so valuable that the centurions cast lots for it at the crucifixion. And throughout his ministry, Jesus' teachings were about a generous heavenly Father who wants to give us not only our daily bread, but his very kingdom. And Jesus said in John 14:12, "And whatsoever you ask for in my name, that I will do, that the Father may be glorified in the Son." And in another wonderful book, not Catherine Ponder's, but another one, called The Four Spiritual Laws of Prosperity, Edwin Gaines interprets this Bible verse as the following. in the name of the indwelling Christ. The indwelling Christ will do for you so that you can glorify God. And she says, let me tell you something. God is not glorified by poverty. God is not glorified when you feel guilty or unworthy. God is not glorified when you run around playing the victim. God is glorified when you stand up, acknowledge who you are as a divine being, and claim your birthright. Now back to Catherine Ponder, who writes, the reason why there is still poverty today in this universe of lavish abundance is that many people still do not understand the basic laws of life. Now, I have to stop here for just a moment and emphasize that it would be metaphysical malpractice for any of us to impose judgments to those who are in poverty. And I know nobody in this room would do that, but some people sometimes do, right? I taught in Appalachia for several years, and I absolutely know, it is very difficult to be raised in a poverty consciousness when you're in fifth or sixth generation poverty. Some of the kids I taught were never exposed to the idea that abundance was theirs. And isn't that sad? Maybe it's part of our job to spread that word to everybody. That said, what is the first thing you think people think of when we talk about prosperity? If you hear the phrase, he's a rich man or she's a rich woman, what do you think? Money. Money, 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 don't you? That's exactly what we think of. We always think of money. However, in our personal lives, in our community, and in our church, true prosperity is more than money. The word prosperity comes from the Latin prosperus, which means doing well. I may not be able to see that as large as I could blow it up. But Ponder says we can open our minds when we realize the true definition of the word. And that means the true definition of the word includes peace of mind. It includes harmony. It includes wholeness and healing, and it includes love. Also, it includes financial plenty, all of those together. Now, we readily recognize the first four on the list as spiritual ideas, don't we? I mean, we all say, oh yeah, those are spiritual ideas. But how many of us really recognize financial plenty as a spiritual idea? Ponder says, to open your mind to prosperity is to deliberately open your mind to the idea that money is part of your spiritual inheritance. Again, looking to the Bible, we see many, many references of bread and fish, which Ponder calls marvelous prosperity symbolism. And as we've mentioned before in former lessons, bread symbolizes the substance of the universe, out of which we mold and shape our thoughts and intentions. And fish represent, does anybody remember? Well, somebody's doing a great job up here teaching, aren't they? I don't know who that would be. Who is it? Okay. All right. They represent ideas of increase. Fish always represent ideas of increase. So Ponder writes that many of Jesus' miracles were prosperity miracles, and many of his parables were about prosperity. Think about it. His first miracle was the gift of the feast of the finest wine at the wedding feast. And more than once, he unhesitatingly used the laws of prosperity to feed thousands out of little in a desert place. Well, if that is all true, what does Jesus mean when he says to the disciples about the young ruler, truly I tell you that a rich man shall hardly enter into the kingdom of heaven? Well, this is one of the verses that has been used to convince people that poverty is not a spiritual idea. However, Bible scholars tell us that really it's a mistranslation. Rich man really is more one who trusts in riches, one who loves money above all else. And Ponder says that Jesus is reminding his disciples and us in this verse that a spiritual consciousness of prosperity gives us control over our possessions and not the other way around, not letting our possessions control us. According to Catherine Ponder, the prosperity secret of the ages, one of her books is titled this, the prosperity secret of the ages is this: God, The divine I am is the source of your supply. I'm going to say that again. God, the divine I am, is the source of your supply. She quotes Moses' advice to the Hebrews when he said, "Remember the Lord your God, for it is he who gives you the ability to produce or get wealth." That's from Deuteronomy. This means that as long as we relate to the source, we're going to prosper. But when we turn away from God and depend on people and outer circumstances as our source, we limit our prosperity. I read a story recently about a woman who longed for years for her husband's boss to give him a raise. And I mean, she prayed and she visualized and she created boards and she did all sorts of things, and it never happened. And eventually she attended a prosperity workshop and learned there to kind of shift her prayers and just claim the prosperity of the universe. And very shortly after that, almost at the exact moment that their youngest child entered kindergarten, she was offered a lucrative position in a firm really close to her house, complete with childcare. And there are many, many stories throughout Ponder's writing about things like that. But what that really proves to us is that we have to be open. We can't close the way we think our prosperity is going to come. We have to be open to it, open to infinite possibilities of good. And Ponder says the first step is cleansing the mind. You know, we were engaged in the burning bowl not too long ago. The first step is cleansing the mind. She says, if people knew the cleansing steps to prosperity and used them, they could revolutionize their lives for good. She calls this, appropriately, the vacuum law of prosperity. And it's basically this. If you want greater good, greater prosperity in your life, start forming a vacuum to receive it. In other words, get rid of what you don't want to make room for what you do want. The vacuum law works in both outer and inner ways. Ponder says, if there are clothes in your closet, does that look familiar to anybody? You don't have to admit that, but at any rate, there it is. I won't say whose house I went to take that picture. Maybe my own. I don't know. Ponder says, if there are clothes in your closet or furniture in your home that you no longer want or need, get rid of them. Get rid of the expensive as well as the inexpensive. Get rid of the new as well as of the old. Get rid of anything that is no longer serving you. Forming a vacuum in the outer way makes a believer of your subconscious mind, which then goes to work in inner ways to create space for greater prosperity to manifest. Also, releasing what we no longer need helps us to get order, doesn't it, in the outer, and that helps us to align with divine order. So here's one of the denials and affirmations that Catherine Ponder gives us, and I'm going to have these in your little bulletin next week, I promise. But let's do this one together. I now let go of worn out things, worn out conditions, worn out relationships. Divine order is established now, and maintained in me and my world is now established, is what the screen says. Isn't that a great denial and affirmation for releasing? It really is. So, interestingly, sometimes when things seem out of order, instead of rushing around frantically trying to set them right or trying to change other people to make them right, we simply need to get our own thoughts and feelings in order. And then people, she says, situations, and even the universe will respond to us in an orderly way. Now sometimes, and this is a little hard for us at times, but sometimes the vacuum law means we have to give up one good for a greater good. Has anybody ever done that? Yeah, I wouldn't be standing here right now if I had not given up the greater good of my former career, which I loved. I loved it. But it came to me that it was just time to move on. And that, I bet, has happened to a lot of people. Ponder quotes Dr. Ernest Wilson's explanation. I love this. He says, all of our loosing is not simply the loosing of so-called evil, in quotes. We must loose forms of good also. Good is seldom static. It is progressive. It evolves. It changes. And we must allow it to do so. We must loose a custom forms of good when our progress or that of someone else involved demands it. We must not be afraid to trust the law that brought the good to bring us an even greater good to fulfill it. We must be, I love this line, we must be willing to let angels go that archangels may come into our lives. Loose your good, hold it gently, and free it readily. And when you are just absolutely aligned with the power and presence, you will know what good is yours to release and what good is yours to hold on to. And so, when we are trying to achieve a certain result in our lives, and it has not come, that happened to anybody? You know, it just doesn't seem to be manifesting. Ponder says, often it is because there is still something in mind, body, or affairs, or maybe even relationships that we need to renounce, free, or eliminate. As we clean our closets, we also need to clean out our consciousness. She emphasizes that one of the most important ways we can cleanse our mind is through something we've talked about a lot, forgiveness. And she writes, many people are never permanently prospered, no matter what else they do, because they are holding grudges and negative feelings toward others. And she says, don't be afraid to give up your good for a greater good. That was John Rockefeller. And Catherine Ponder says, when you hold resentments toward another, you are bound to that person by an emotional link that is stronger than steel. Forgiveness is the only way to dissolve that link and get free. And I know many of us have heard this quote attributed to everyone on the face of the earth, from Martin Luther King to Nelson Mandela to Marianne Williamson. I can't figure out who first said it. Maybe some people think Emmett Fox was the original writer. But it is, not forgiving someone is like drinking poison and expecting the other person to die. And isn't that true? Who does not forgiving someone else hurt? It hurts us. It hurts ourselves. The word forgive actually means to give up or to give for. And forgiving others means to give up all ill thoughts and resentments about them, maybe even as we have to give up contact with them. Sometimes we have to release people from our lives, but we do so in a spirit of love and forgiveness. Forgiveness is actually an inner intention that brings peace and harmony to our souls, says Ponder. And she also suggests that we give ourselves a universal forgiveness treatment every day to keep our minds clear of negative thoughts that block our good. We're going to do one today during our meditation, and then later on I'll have it typed up for you if any of you would like it. So for this moment, just know that forgiveness is not a one-time thing, is it? It's a constant daily process. And next Sunday, we're going to explore other laws and specific strategies for bringing God's wonderful supply into our lives. As we work with the affirmations this week, however, let's remember that abundance is all around us, as well as innately within us. Talents, abilities, and ideas just longing for expression. It is prosperous thinking that opens our mind to prosperity. Our minds open to the rich substance and supply that is already there. It's our attitudes, our mental models, our beliefs, and our outlook that are connecting links with God's rich substance. Catherine tells us it is up to you in this wonderful age to claim spiritual dominion of great good over everything. Dare to open your mind to prosperity, and you will subdue, change, and transform your world into exactly what you desire it to be. And so it is. And so now, as we prepare together for a time of prayer and meditation, let us affirm the foundational principle, the foundational truth about God. This truth is being affirmed in Unity churches all over the world every single Sunday, and it's printed in the bulletin for those of you who are here for the first time. Together, there is only one presence and one power in the universe and at work in my life. God, the good, omnipotent, and so it is.